Good morning, and thank you for joining me on the Path to Liberty. I'm Michael Bolden with the 10th Amendment Center, and this is the Fast Friday edition of the show for September 15th, 2023. And if you've been following the show for any amount of time, you've heard me cite Lysander Spooner many times. He's actually one of my favorite writers from the 19th century, despite the fact that I don't agree with everything he happened to say, but very, very interesting takes. Now, even though he wrote about constitutional issues and more for literally decades, very few people alive today have ever even heard his name. And unfortunately, a vast majority of the people who have heard his name really don't know much more than a single quote. One famous quote they've seen on a meme, and they love it, but they don't know much else. So I want to start turning that around a little bit. And today I want to share a bunch of my favorite Lysander Spooner quotes interspersed with very similar takes from the founding generation. And I want to start it out with this. The word void. Here in Constitutional Law Relative to Credit, Currency, and Banking in 1843, he said, an unconstitutional law is void and has no legal effect upon anything. He recognized, just like the founders did, and I'll get to that in a moment, that if the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, whether you like it or hate it, soon as the government goes beyond those limits, that act is no law. It is void. And again, has no legal effect upon anything. Now, unfortunately, a lot of people rely on the government to make that determination, but we'll get to that in just a moment. And here he is again with a similar take 7 years later, a defense for fugitive slaves, probably my favorite of his. He said, an unconstitutional statute is no law in the view of the Constitution. It is void and confers no authority on anyone. And this is a juicy part. Whoever attempts to execute it does so at his peril. Now, this was just reiterating a commonly held view from the founders and the old revolutionaries. Spooner read all of their stuff. He was aware of what they had to say and the arguments that they made. We can go all the way back to the beginning of the controversy between the colonies and Great Britain, the kickoff of the American Revolution, 1761, James Otis Jr.'s great speech against the writs of assistance, where he said an act against the Constitution is void. Now, of course, this is not the written Constitution, but any Constitution, as soon as government has rules given to it, as soon as government goes beyond those limits, those rules, that act is void and has no legal effect, whether the government itself agrees that its act is legal or not. And that's how James Otis Jr. put it. That's the beginning of the American Revolution. Thomas Jefferson in 1798, the Kentucky Resolutions, said, whensoever the general government assumes undelegated power. So, as soon as it does something that is not constitutional any single time, Jefferson said, its acts are unauthoritative, void, and of no force. Not much different than how Lysander Spooner put it, or vice versa. Now, Spooner next, of course, you can't trust the government. And he put it this way, in the unconstitutionality of the Legal Tender Acts of Congress in 1864, Alan Mosley's been doing the blog posts for a few weeks on this or organizing them for us, and we'll get it published over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/path-to-liberty for this episode in a couple hours after this live stream is done today. And there you're going to find a show link section for this episode where you're going to find all of these original source documents that I'm citing today, both the founders and Spooner stuff, because you really got to read more of this on your own time, because I'm just scratching the surface. Here he is in 1864 about not trusting government. Nevertheless, after the Constitution had been adopted, the country, having some knowledge of the propensity of legislative bodies to disregard all constitutional and moral restraints and to resort to all manner of injustice under the pretext of its being necessary and proper for accomplishing some desirable purpose or other, of course desirable to the government, did append various amendments to the Constitution, specifically enumerating and forbidding some of those unjust laws which it was supposed Congress would otherwise be most likely to enact. He's acknowledging here that, you know, when you give government rules, government still has the propensity to violate all of those rules, both constitutional and moral restraints. This is very similar, or a similar take to what Richard Henry Lee had to say many years ago. No power should be exercised, but such as expressly given, and therefore no constructive power can be exercised. To prevent this is the great use of a Bill of Rights. Now back to Spooner, he said, having done this, the country then, as if aware of the impossibility of enumerating all laws that ought to be forbidden, and by way of imposing a general prohibition against all unjust laws not specially enumerated, added these two comprehensive amendments. And of course, he points to, I would think, his favorites. Then he loved the ninth. Number one was ninth, but he also liked the 10th is very similar. Later on, he may have said it was awful, but who knows? Both the ninth and the 10th amendment, he cites those as well. Now, of course, he knows that the government itself can't be the final say over the powers of the government. That is very similar to what I was getting at right off the beginning. If the government does stuff beyond the limits of its delegated powers, that act is void, no matter what. There is no legal authority. But he takes it even further, because you have to understand that the way that people treat government power is to go to government and ask government to stop doing stuff that the government never was supposed to do in the first place, and this is absurd. Anyways, he said, we hold, this is the address of the free constitutionalists to the people of the United States in 1860. We hold that the assumption of the Supreme Court of the United States to decide authoritatively for the people of this country what their rights and liberties are and what is the true meaning of the Constitution is an assumption of absolute power. If the people are the fountain of all power and government gets to determine the limits of its own power, that doesn't go together. This is government having complete and total power. He said, an entire and flagrant usurpation authorized by no word or syllable of the Constitution, and that it should not be submitted to for a moment unless we, all of us, design to be slaves. So relying on the government to tell the people that the government, whether or not the government is following the rules given to the government, is giving the government unlimited power. Thomas Jefferson had a very similar take. He said, you seem to consider the judges as the ultimate arbiters of all constitutional questions. A very dangerous doctrine indeed, and one which would place us under the despotism of an oligarchy. So many similarities between some of the Jeffersonian takes and some of the Spoonerite takes. And here he is in the essay on the trial by jury in 1862. Spooner points out, when did a government fail to determine that all its acts were within the constitutional and authorized limits of its power? If it were permitted to determine that question for itself? Some people think that the Supreme Court is going to save us. Maybe they throw you a bone once in a while. Empires have always done that. And they get you to back down on resistance because now it's run by the good guys. Well, that's never the case in the long run, because ultimately, as Spooner points out, as long as government gets to make that determination of how much power it's going to have, that power will always grow and grow and grow, regardless of who's in power or whatever checks and balances that there may be. And that's the same type of take that both Thomas Jefferson and James Madison had to say in the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions of 1798. And here is Jefferson's fair copy for the Kentucky resolutions. He said, every state has a natural right, in cases not within the compact, to nullify of their own authority all assumptions of power by others within their limits. As soon as someone assumes power that they're not supposed to have, the people of each state have a natural right to nullify it. He said, without this right, they would be under the dominion, absolute and unlimited, of whosoever might exercise this right of judgment for them. Very similar again, Jefferson, Madison as well, a little bit there, but I didn't quote him directly, and Spooner. Now, next up is final authority or sovereignty. Sovereignty, the founders, the old revolutionaries, of course, they labored under a system where the king in parliament held total, complete authority, final authority and sovereignty. They claimed the power over the colonies in all cases whatsoever. Spooner, I can't remember which one of these essays and papers that he had written on talking about this history of sovereignty as well, probably right here in this letter to Grover Cleveland in 1886. But certainly the founders revolted against this. They fought a long bloody war to free themselves from the idea that government held final authority over itself. And he writes here, what then is a sovereign government? It is a government that is sovereign over all the natural rights of the people, This is the only sovereignty that any government can be said to have. Under it, the people have no rights. So ultimately, if you think about it, if government holds sovereignty or final authority, you don't actually have rights. You are at the mercy of the people in power. You're literally not living in a land of the free. It's a population on its knees begging for scraps or permission. And that's basically what Spooner's getting at here, too. They are simply subjects, that is, slaves. They have but one law and one duty: obedience, submission. They are not recognized as having any rights. They can claim nothing as their own. They can only accept what the government chooses to give them. And even though the system of the founders wasn't set up like that, this is how the people have treated it. As long as people are relying on government to limit government itself, whether it's through the courts or through the choosing new people for power or protest, this is all about asking government to limit its own power. And they are treating it as it is sovereign, that it has final authority. And as long as that happens, things will keep getting worse and worse and worse. So the government owns them, Spooner writes, and their property, and disposes of them and their property at its pleasure or discretion without regard to any consent or dissent on their part. They do what they can get away with. Now, James Wilson wasn't nearly as aggressive on this. He was certainly one of the kind of big nationalist, high nationalist, big government guys, but a top legal mind. But he pointed out that in the American system, sovereignty had always been with the people. He said, the truth is that in our governments, the supreme, absolute, and uncontrollable power remains in the people. It's what it always was. It's just that every other system hadn't followed along with it. So they actually tried to make that happen. Anyways, here back to a Spooner and a defense for fugitive slaves once again. He said, to say, as the arguments of most persons do, that the people in their individual and natural capacities have a right to institute government, but they have no right in the same capacities to preserve that government by putting down usurpation, and that any attempt to do so is revolution, is blank absurdity. So if we're talking about final authority, if the people hold sovereignty and final authority, then they can create government and they can tell government, hey, you've usurped power and we are going to not just stop it, but put it down. He said the right and the physical, this is Lysander Spooner again in Defense for Fugitive Slaves in 1850, the right and the physical power of the people to resist injustice are really the only securities that any people ever can have for their liberties. Spooner recognized that as long as people submitted to what government wants, government would always continue growing. If they relied on government to do the right thing, maybe sometimes government would do the right thing, but in general, in the long run, they'd always lose their liberty. That's the same thing that Patrick Henry warned about in the Virginia Ratifying Convention, where, and I didn't have this one prepped, I don't have it in front of me, but off the top of my head, it was basically, show me that age and country where the rights and liberties of the people were placed on the sole chance of their rulers being good men, without a consequent loss of liberty, I say, the loss of that dearest privilege followed every such mad attempt. You guys can tell me how close I got to the original on that one if you want to look it up. But basically, Patrick Henry is saying, as soon as you rely on government to do the right thing, in the long run, you are guaranteed 100 zillion % guaranteed that you are going to lose the liberty. And that's exactly what Spooner was saying as well. James Iredell. If we go back to what Spooner said, the right and physical power of the people to resist injustice are really the only securities that any people ever can have for their liberties. He sounds like one of the first associate justices of the Supreme Court. James Iredell, here in the North Carolina Ratifying Convention, said the only resource against usurpation is the inherent right of the people to prevent its exercise. Iredell here is saying not just a good idea, not something to try later on, but the only way to deal with a government that goes beyond the limits of the powers delegated to it in the Constitution. That's the only way to do it. And he didn't say the inherent right of the people to ask government to stop doing what government wasn't supposed to do in the first place. It's the inherent right of the people to prevent its exercise. Next up, a little bit on federalism And here's how he put it. What's this? This is again from the Free Constitutionalist paper in 1860. The government of the United States cannot act directly upon the state governments as governments, requiring them to do this and forbidding them to do that. This is one of the base structures of the federal system. The federal government can't tell the states, you got to enforce this, you got to participate in that, you can't do this and that. They don't have that authority whatsoever. It must therefore act directly upon individuals, else it cannot act at all. And I believe he was the third Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Oliver Ellsworth put it this way. This Constitution does not attempt to coerce sovereign bodies, states, in their political capacity. Not as hardcore as Spooner, but recognizing the same thing that the central government, the general government, does not have the authority to tell the states what they can and cannot do. And oddly enough, the modern Supreme Court has upheld this principle. Very few things has it upheld properly when it comes to the original legal meaning of the Constitution. But under the legal doctrine of anti-commandeering, over and over and over, the Supreme Court has followed this. Murphy versus NCAA 2018 was one of the most recent, I think it was the most recent one. The anti-commandeering doctrine, Samuel Alito wrote, may sound arcane, but it is simply the expression of a fundamental structural design incorporated into the Constitution, i.e., the decision to withhold from Congress the power to issue orders directly to the states, just like what Spooner was saying. Conspicuously absent from the list of powers given to Congress is the power to issue direct orders to the governments of the states. The anti-commandeering doctrine simply represents the recognition of this limit on congressional authority. Basically, the court in that opinion basically took the position that Congress can't take action that dictates what a state legislature may or may not do, even if it isn't directly in line with federal law. So they cannot boss the states around. It's really just up to the states to say, we're not going to be bossed around. And here in a letter to Thomas Bayard in 1882, Spooner said this: to say that the people of this country ever have bound or ever could bind themselves by any contract whatever, the Constitution or any other, to thus give away all their natural rights of property, liberty, and life into the hands of a few men, a mere conclave, and that they should make it a part of the contract itself, that these few men should be held legally irresponsible for the disposal they should make of those rights, is an utter absurdity. So he's saying it's literally just absurd that they could, you know, hand off to this conclave of men the power to take away their natural rights. Now, that's a little bit more hardcore. He got much more radical in his later years of writing, but we do find some similarities from the founding generation as well. Here, Theophilus Parsons, a top orator and legal mind in the Massachusetts Ratifying Convention, put it this way: no power was given to Congress to infringe on any one of the natural rights of the people. Not as hardcore as what Spooner was having to say, but very similar. They do not have the power to infringe on any of the natural rights of the people. And of course, you're not just going to list that all out. That's why there's the Ninth and the Tenth Amendment. But just like the founders, Spooner recognized, of course, that when you rely on government to limit itself, government will always grow. And that's why it's up to the people to learn how to protect and defend their own constitution and their own liberty, whether the government happens to agree with them or not. And let's close it out with maybe my favorite, at least for today, again from Defense for Fugitive Slaves in 1850. He said, this right of the people, let me try one more time. Of course, my favorite one, I'm getting all hyped up about it. Lysander Spooner, A Defense for Fugitive Slaves in 1850. This right of the people, therefore, to resist usurpation on the part of the government is a strictly constitutional right. And the exercise of the right is neither rebellion against the Constitution nor revolution. It is a maintenance of the Constitution itself by keeping the government within the Constitution. So if government tries to violate the limits of the delegated powers, and the people just resist it, then it can't do it. They can pass all kinds of stuff on the laws, but they don't have any impact in practice or effect. And Spooner sums it up like this. It is also a defense of the natural rights of the people against robbers and trespassers who attempt to set up their own personal authority and power in opposition to those of the Constitution and people which they were appointed to administer. Well, I hope you guys found this interesting. I hope it was educational. It was long for a Fast Friday, but I love this stuff, and I hope you enjoyed this as much as I enjoyed sharing with you. If you want to help us get this kind of information out to more people, please consider a membership over at 10thAmendmentCenter.com/members. It starts out at just $2 a month. You got a couple of bucks of that dirty government fiat, throw it our way. We punch way above our weight class to take a stand for the Constitution and liberty, and of course, how to defend both when government refuses to do so, which is constantly. I got to get out of here today, but I hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope you have a great weekend, and I hope to see you next week here on the Path to Liberty.